The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Welcome once again to Podcast Beyond, episode 393. This is the ultimate PlayStation podcast. I am your host, Max Scova. With me, Marty Sleva.
That was intimidating.
Yeah. Because get away from me.
Yeah.
Watch it, Marty. Also, who's probably better at being intimidating in real life, Brian Altano. And who probably couldn't and wouldn't intimidate anyone because he's just a ray of sunshine, Jared Petty.
I don't intimidate. I just destroy my enemies.
Okay, I stand corrected. That was a little bit intimidating.
I feel uncomfortable in this room.
Wow. You don't have any of those, though, right?
Wait, enemies? Not really, no. I mean, not anymore. Once dead.
Because they're dead.
Gone. Yeah, they're gone.
All right.
All right.
So, I didn't say that. Destroyed.
Yes.
Destroyed.
Like, subscribe, and send. Yeah.
It's like an Orwell, vaporized.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have reaped the whirlwind. Okay, so we've got things to talk about. Is this right? Ukulele? We're talking about
you always just seem so confused when we.
Why you like? What are the odds that somebody left the wrong notes in here and they're just like, "Well, I got some good news about Halo 5 coming. Ukulele, which is the spiritual successor to Banjo Kazooie, which, to my knowledge, has never been on a PlayStation system.
No,
is a thing on Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. We're gonna talk about that. I'm excited.
Kickstarted right in the behind.
Whoa,
We're gonna gripe a little bit more about the Arkham Knight Season Pass DLC because there is a lot of it. Quite a lot of it.
But it's like the opposite of a gripe, I think.
Is it a good gripe?
It's a good gripe. This is a follow-up to last week's conversation. Less gripey.
Okay. Good. Less gripey version of that.
Yeah.
I think that good gripes is a brand of kitchenware that I use that has rubberized gripes on the handles of all the things.
Rubberized gripes.
Get a gripe.
What about good grapes?
Good grapes. Delicious. We're going to answer a question we get a lot about Metal Gear, which we got an email about, but I also see it posted on Facebook about once a week. So, our dream video game mashup. God, we've got so many wonderful topics. And we got an actual physical letter in the mail. And then we're going to finally address our Podcast Beyond Book Club.
We did. We did bad, but now we did good.
We did bad, but we're going to try to fix it better. Aru's Awakening and Monster Bag are the games we were playing. If you played those with us at home, then you can know what we're talking about. Hopefully. Wolfenstein The Old Blood is out Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm reviewing it, but we don't have it.
All right, that's an odd thing to have.
That's a spooky thing.
Okay. And then, of course, like you know, we've got our new PlayStation Plus for the month, which we'll get to.
Smiling.
No, that's it. Max is always it's like a grandfather who just got the newspaper. And he's like, Korea.
It's because they asked me to do. They're like, host the show. Marty puts these in front of me. They put these things.
We all contribute to the stock throughout the morning.
Yeah, this has been around since what, 9 a.m.
I was busy today.
He's not trying to Ron Burgundy you. Ukulele is a real game name.
Yeah. Ukulele. Okay. What ukulele?
Are we going to get into it?
Yeah.
Let's get into ukulele.
Ukulele. Funded within an hour, fastest game to hit $1 million in Kickstarter, yeah. which is already over $2 million. It's Playtonic Games, who are a bunch of former Rare devs who did Donkey Kong Country and Banjo-Kazooie and Viva Pinata.
Yeah.
Ukulele is a chameleon with a bat on its head.
Yeah, Yuka is the chameleon. Lele is the bat.
It's the animal, the bat, not the sporting good.
Not the Casey Jones weapon.
Yeah,
that'd be a weird thing to have on someone's head.
It's a video game.
that's true. I guess a bat is a weird animal to have on a chameleon.
You gotta know what a crumpet is to understand cricket. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome news. This is really awesome news. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the sort of classic open world-ish 3D platformers that all but died. I think it's because they kind of killed themselves. The market got incredibly oversaturated with them at some point. A lot of people say Donkey Kong 64 was the one that kind of killed that off. It's up there. You know, but there was a lot of really bad. I mean, this happened on PlayStation too. There was a lot of really bad kind of open world ish platforming games. I would say even some of the Crash Bandicoots veered into questionable territory at times.
So I mean, this has obviously the Rare legacy obviously comes from Nintendo platforms and is now on Microsoft.
Yeah.
But the 3D character based platformers, I think, were a staple of PS1 and PS2.
Yeah.
That's where Insomniac started with stuff like we had Spyro and Ratchet and Clank, and then that's where Naughty Dog started with stuff like Crash and Jak and Daxter.
Yeah.
And then, it sort of just went away, and then first-person shooters came up, and that sort of became the new genre du jour.
People grew up.
And yeah.
Well, yeah, but counterpoint to that, I think that these aren't games that we're necessarily playing, but I do think the genre does still exist. This is Skylanders. This is Disney Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are this kind of game. They're just not made for us anymore.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I would actually say that those are more hack-and-slash games set in a 3D environment.
Yeah, I would say that Skylanders is very firmly rooted in something like Diablo.
There is it is very hack-and-slash, I agree, but so are a lot of these exploratory platforms. Frankly,
I think a lot of those games are interesting. They just kind of lose that kind of the word collectathon that used to get thrown around, which I think the Lego games kind of nail more than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
They're actually the closest thing we have to 3D platformers right now on that collection aspect, and the platforming stuff is obviously still held down by games like Little Big Planet and Super Mario, but even Nintendo's not really doing that sort of Mario 64, here's your hub world, it's all connected by smaller worlds with different challenges you have
to
I mean, I think also, I think people realize that a lot of 3D platforming initially was very gimmicky.
Yeah.
You know, it was utilizing the hardware. Like Super Mario 64 changed the way games are made entirely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people wanted it to be exactly that in the years that followed. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually it kind of came to terms with the fact that it's hard to make a really balanced game that fits that format.
Yeah.
And when you're making a game that's typically targeted at kids, if it's too difficult or it doesn't work right, it's probably just easier to just do something 2D or to do something that's a little bit simpler.
Yeah.
I distinctly hated Banjo-Kazooie. I never got into Banjo-Kazooie, but Banjo-Kazooie came out right when I was, I think, like 12 or 13, and I was already kind of moving away from the cutesy Nintendo stuff. And like I was into Metal Gear at that point, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'd moved on to something that I thought was more mature and older. But also, it just there was something kind of goofy and cartoony in a way that just never hit me right, you know. Like I totally get nostalgic for like 80s cartoons.
Yeah.
70s cartoons don't do that for me. And I think that there is an entire generation of kids who see something like Banjo-Kazooie or Ukulele, and they're like, oh, that's my childhood right there. I want to go right there and jump right on that.
Yeah.
But you know, and I have that feeling for Pokemon, but for whatever reason, this just doesn't move the needle there.
And that group of people who, you know, this is tugging at their heartstrings is evident in the fact that this was funded like literally in 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that group of people is where everyone in this room is now, where they are grown-ups with expendable incomes. Mm-hmm. And everyone's listening to the show.
Yeah.
You're not listening to the show if you don't, unless you're just like, I buy one game every 5 years, but I love podcasts. Like, if you're listening to a video game podcast, you have some extra money to throw around at some dumb toy stuff, probably because you enjoy it, or also because it sort of reminds you of something from your childhood. But this is funded entirely by a group of, I would guess, 20 to 30 somethings who are huge fans of this genre, and they watched it disappear and they want it to come back in some form.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, 15 or 20 bucks or 30 bucks. Like, the entry to get into something like this is pretty low. considering that you get a copy of the game, I think, for PC and one of the consoles for, I believe it's $35 plus a playable demo.
Yeah, that's so awesome. You're getting, you're going to get, the game's going to be downloadable when it comes out for PC, Wii U, Xbox One, and obviously PS4.
Right.
Which is super exciting. Yeah, that was a stretch goal that I think was met, like,
which is
immediately.
Which is the other interesting thing. Does somebody, can you actually pull up their Kickstarter? I want to know just how many backers they actually have.
Oh, the actual number.
Yeah, but the other interesting thing is that back in the day, these games were $60, $70, $80, mm-hmm. you know, 3D platformers. And now you're getting one, a brand new one, for $25.
Yeah.
And they're adding this is an important story for me as like a guy who used to play platformers like this. But it's also an important story for gamers, because watching this game grow and develop on the fly is kind of amazing. They are adding tiers faster than I think any video game Kickstarter ever has. And they're flying through them.
Yeah, their initial 10 tiers got eclipsed the weekend.
They're actually they announced one over the weekend that was like, we'll hire an orchestra to play the music. Yeah. It's like, well,
no.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's insane, because I remember playing Banjo-Kazooie or Mario 64. I was never like, oh, this needs an orchestra, you know. But then you look at something like Mario Kart 8 and you hear the music in it and you go, okay, that
really
makes sense.
Well, yeah, the N64, that was one of its few weaknesses, was sound.
Yeah.
And so here they're going to have an opportunity to improve on one of the aspects of this game that they couldn't technically do before. I don't like Banjo-Kazooie, and I'm still very excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is this has actually happened before in a different way. It was pre-Kickstarter, but there was a period of time that 2D platformers were considered dead.
Yeah.
And then everybody got older, that grew up on them, and got their own credit cards, and suddenly there was demand again, and a few small ones came out at first, little experimental ones, and suddenly, bam, there was this renaissance of 2D platformers, which continues to this day with games like with Rayman just a year ago, or some of the other wonderful things we're getting. Now it's happening for 3D platforms.
I think we're seeing it with the rhythm genre as well, which is really cool. That's just like, I don't know. I'm 34 years old, right? So I've seen a lot in terms of the video game industry. I pretty much grew up with it, and there were probably a couple of times throughout my existence where I was like, this genre is dead. Like, puzzle games are gone now. And no, they're not, because now there's a way to bring them back. And 3D platforming is gone. No, it's not. Yeah. Rhythm games are gone. It's not.
With digital distribution, nothing has to be gone anymore.
Yeah.
There's an economic way to make these games and not have to charge $60 on a physical medium and hand them to you, which is awesome.
With not so much digital distribution, but with crowdfunding.
Yeah,
it's
so
like it's,
the number
you
is 40,000.
Okay.
It has 40,000 backers as of the fourth day of its.
Yeah, which is like... It's interesting because this is now the quickest. I think it's the quickest $1 million video game Kickstarter.
The
ever,
third
right?
quickest Kickstarter ever. I think
period.
After like the Pebble.
It's up there with that. Yeah, that Pebble Watch and a couple other.
I think
things.
It makes sense that you had a lot of people obviously that they knew were going to be interested.
And the
in this,
Ouya,
but the
maybe,
other
yeah.
half of this is the fact that this is Playtonic. These are guys that have already made games.
Yeah,
right.
That
games.
People
yeah.
want. You know,
right,
they're just like, these are the guys that made that thing I love and that other thing I love, and they haven't gotten to make what they want in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And
besides, they're Playtonic. They're not trying to fuck you. They just want to be friends. That was worth it.
That was totally worth it.
Throw it in there.
Yeah.
But that being said, it's amazing that small amount of people can create such a successful Kickstarter. Because what I was saying to you guys off air a couple of days ago was when this was at 19,000 people.
Yeah.
Even at 40,000 people doesn't even chart you on the NPD.
Sure.
Right.
Like, that's not even in the top. I don't even think that's in the top 50 or 40 games on NPD. If Sony put out a new game and they said this is coming exclusively to PlayStation 4, it's a 3D platformer and it sold 40,000 copies, that team that worked on it would probably be dissolved.
Yeah.
And that game would be laughed out of the industry as like a bomb. And for years, people would be like, "Oh, that sleeper hit that no one played."
Yeah.
But this, in reverse, through the Kickstarter model, is now one of it's one of the most impressive feats in modern video game history.
Yeah.
So
yeah, really,
I think
it's
amazing that story can be told in different ways like that. And
now
we have a hit. Before the game's even out, you know, these guys already made their money. So
yeah, the problem with it though is that people have expectations.
Yeah,
you know?
So you don't know, is this going to be like Shovel Knight or Broken Age, where you know we gave them all this money and something amazing came out of it.
Yeah,
is it going to be a Dutch?
It could fall apart, but you know, it's you know, hope for the best and just it is scary though with specifically with Kickstarter. You see this, I think, less with Patreon because more of a sense of like a kind of camaraderie and
we're
kind
in it together.
ongoing funding. But it's also harder to fund like kind of. Like single packages, which is what a game is. With Kickstarter, we saw this a lot with the Oculus Rift. When people donate towards something, it they feel like they are investors, and they have like a, and you know, Oculus got bought by Facebook, and then it's like, where's my money?
And the investors didn't get a penny. Yeah.
And it's, but that's kind of part of the.
I mean,
I think it's also, it's also kind of interesting because for almost, I would say nowadays, for every success you hear about a Kickstarter, you also hear about one where things went horribly awry, you know? And that's just, that's obviously the way that we report things and all the media reports things, because there's hundreds of Kickstarters that go perfectly fine or just flatline. Nothing happens at all. But, like, I was just reading about one the other day about this guy who was making a this modded N64. Did you guys read about this Kickstarter? This guy basically put up a fake Kickstarter for a portable N64 kit.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out he stole all the pictures off of, like, Etsy or something.
Like Ben Heck's website
and,
or something?
Yeah. Got all the money, and no one could find him for a while, and he just, he, like, messaged everybody the other day, and he's like, sorry, I was on a cruise. And, like, that sucks. And I feel kind of like the Kickstarter spike happened already. That's though, if you had asked me a month ago, I would have been like, "That's, this story's done." But obviously, there's still life left, and there's still some faith and some trust in the system.
Mm-hmm. There's still models where Kickstarter works better than Patreon. I mean, Patreon's good for all kinds of things, but you do need that upfront money sometimes just to make sure you can get the people on board to build a big
team. Oh, yeah, because this team right now seems like it's like 10 people, and I have no doubt it's going to grow.
It's
wonderful to see it happen. I really am just thrilled about this. Though I've been burned on Kickstarter, but I've also gotten Broken Age out of it.
So. And at the very least, we're going to get a new 3D platforming game on the PS4.
Here is something to think about. This is a bunch of ex-Rare devs. Rare got bought by Microsoft. What are the odds we're going to see this on Sony before Microsoft? Like, if they're going to be doing stuff, you can believe that people at probably all the console manufacturers are on the phone trying to, like, get these guys to be like, oh, hey, can we let's talk? You're hired.
That's tough, man.
So as of now, the messaging is day and date.
On
everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's going to work with Kickstarter, but, like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we Kickstarted Broken Age, but then it became a PlayStation game as well, and it's not a Microsoft game.
Same. I mean, Shovel Knight launched on Nintendo platforms.
Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, so that's always a conversation with these things is, if you look at something like Shovel Knight, like, we all made that a success, or everyone who Kickstarted it, but it could have just stopped there. It didn't. Like, because the game was good, like, we all got it out the door, but once it was there, the buzz was so strong that it kept going. I mean, it was a Game of the Year nominee for IGN. Mm-hmm. That's when it stops being a Kickstarter indie darling and starts being a real game that a lot of people take seriously. And now it's got platform-exclusive DLC on PS4. It's got platform-exclusive DLC on Xbox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it had a launch exclusivity on Nintendo. So, I think a lot of people might be mad about that. Like, there's this weird allegiance happening right now where suddenly, like, because of Rare and Microsoft, that, like, it's as if they've been together for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, when I saw the Battletoad stuff in Shovel Knight, I was like, why? Like, no Halo fan really cares about the speeder bike level from Battletoads.
Yeah. I thought that was adorable myself.
Yeah, you did, because you would have loved that anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I don't really know if that's, like, an Xbox thing specifically. So if Sony's smart, they'll get on the phone and they'll say, yeah, you know, throw a Sackboy costume in this game.
Knack!
Put Knack in this game.
No,
yeah.
Don't put Knack in the. Please don't put Knack anywhere ever again.
People always like to, you know, do those petitions where it's like, oh, make a new Majora's Mask or whatever. You know, like, there's those fan petitions. And the thing is a signature doesn't really mean anything on the internet. Like, you can have a billions of people say that they watch a video of a cat or whatever. That doesn't mean that cat is a movie star. You know, it's like, that's not how that works. That's not how anything works at all.
Sure, it'll be amazing,
But I mean, like, Kickstarter, on the other hand, if you actually have something with a dollar sign at the front of it, that means a lot more than some signatures. So, you know.
Yeah, 40,000 people give you $20 a piece, then all of a sudden you got something going there.
It's a start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's kind of like the Supreme Court. But with your money.
What is that even? What is that? Justice? We talking about
now,
justice?
Speaking of giving people $40 a piece or something, $40, I guess. Arkham Knight is a season pass of DLC, which has a lot of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bunch of different things.
Yeah. So last week, we bemoaned the fact that, I don't know, did we talk about the price last week?
It's like $40 in addition to the price of the game.
So
right?
That was the whole thing last week, was that this was, they announced the season pass for $40. and they went radio silent on what's in it.
On what it's in, yeah.
But and they so said, they're just like, give us your $40, and everyone's like, what? Like, yeah. For what? And they're just like, ah, it's going to have some stuff. And so there was this massive outcry, despite the fact that, like, everyone loves Rocksteady. Like, everyone is excited for this game. There was this outcry of, well, no, like, tell me what it is first before I give you two-thirds of the price extra of this video game.
Right.
So here's what it is. Yeah. You get Batgirl, A Matter of Family, which is an all-new prequel story expansion in an entirely new location where you play as Batgirl for the very first time in the Arkham series. Check out the first render of Batgirl. You I can't click that link because it's a piece of paper.
I'm assuming, they say by prequel story because in the games, Oracle's already wheelchair-bound.
Right.
Like post-Killing Joke events, so I'm imagining this is when she wasn't.
I like the idea of an entirely new area, by the way. I feel like a lot of these, like the Catwoman stuff was always kind of a retread of the same areas you were already in.
Mm-hmm. The Season of Infamy, you play as Batman in all new story missions featuring legendary supervillains invading Gotham City with new story arcs, missions, and gameplay features. That is really very vague.
That's super vague.
Super vague
stuff.
That's super vague in terms of they probably haven't started building this yet. Yeah. So they're like, there's got to be a bad guy and a mission.
I mean, they say story missions, but it's like that could be like, in like a challenge mode.
A story arc
could be cutscenes or just exposition.
I better go over here next.
Yeah, it sounds like they drop, there's a newspaper clipping and they drop Killer Croc on the map somewhere and you have to go across the city and fight him. That's cool. It's fine.
Then there's Gotham City Stories. You play as Batman's key allies in narrative missions. This is different from a story mission, apparently. extending their storylines from both before and after the events in Batman Arkham Knight.
Or is it Alfred?
A story mission extending their narrative.
Do you
want to
play as Alfred?
Wow. I do want to play.
Yeah. Wow. Like you just want to deliver things?
I just
want
to play
like
as Alfred.
Totally. Almost.
Yeah, just like Tapper. Just
like Cooking Mama, but it's with.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Butler Benedict.
He brings out a meal and Batman's just like, I'm not hungry.
But it's all like really, it's like really gritty. He's got like carbon fiber tuxedo on.
Yeah,
he's just like. He's just totally ripped.
Pours hot tea on criminals.
I like how there's a bunch of different mini games. It turns into like Trauma Center when you have to like get the bullets out of Batman's side.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
you have to tell a riveting anecdote about a ruby the size of a tangerine.
we're joking, but I would totally play this game.
I would.
This sounds great.
I love it. It'd be like the karaoke in Sleeping Dogs, but with like a Michael Caine accent. You know?
I love that.
Just you got to get the intonation, you got to get the gravitas right. Then, of course, there are legendary Batmobiles with themed tracks. Drive the most iconic Batmobiles from Batman's 75-year history on custom-built racetracks, each themed to that Batmobile-specific era. Every Batmobile will be drivable across every racetrack. Bat Mario Kart? Are you kidding me?
I think it might be more like Bat Turismo. this is great.
Have you seen the tracks in this game, though? Like, have you
no.
seen? Because they're like challenge tracks. They're these weird like mini missions where it's sort of like the Riddler puzzles, where you're like,
but you're a car.
At least last I saw, yeah. So it's basically like you got to use your missiles or whatever to flip a switch that makes a jump pop up and stuff.
Yeah.
So
it's
actually not,
that sounds
like,
awesome.
It does like, not look like Gran Turismo.
So it's car platform.
It reminds me of what's that game? Split Second.
Oh man!
Did you guys play that racing game that was like event? It was like a event based racing game.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was interesting. I forgot about that game.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. It depends on the Batmobiles. I would love to see like an Adam West era Batmobile done in that engine.
Yeah,
that
I imagine they'll do that. They'll go back to that iconic Tim Burton one. Hopefully not the Tumbler. I think the Tumbler's dumb.
I think the Tumbler's dumb too. And I actually think
I think it's the Tumbler.
What are you guys gonna get the Tumbler?
It just looks dumb.
There's too many tweens posting on there.
What's the one with all the triangles coming off? Is it Batman and Robin?
Batman Forever has the
where you can
the
like
three-way one.
That one I really like.
And I like the one. Yeah, I think Batman Forever or Robin, where you could see sort of like the blue.
Yeah,
yeah,
glow
those
on
like the
inside.
Neon mobile. Yeah,
like those are bad movies. Really cool Batmobiles.
If they really want to make me just be like throw $40 at them as fast as I can, they would use the unused concept that H.R. Giger did for Batman Forever, where the Batmobile just looked like. It looked like if you could have a four-ended dildo, and it was also a boomerang.
Are we?
I think I don't.
There
have
been four Saints Row games. You can say dildo on a podcast.
Yeah. He's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Judges.
Wait. So I want to talk a little bit. So you edit the audio version of Beyond. What do you do for swears? Because I got a lot of tweets saying, "Awesome job on adding the animal noises to swears."
So here's what happened. Like,
That wasn't me, and I don't know what version
you're
talking
about. I just use beeps because it's a lot easier. Yep. But Alexia, who does the video, throws in apparently animal noises. And last week, Brian's mic was screwed up, so I just stole the audio from him, and he'd already put in cat noises for the curses. So
instead of like what you just said, somebody might just hear hee-haw or something like that.
Yeah. Well, mostly cats, yeah. If you can find a cat that does that, then shoot it.
All right. So back to business, Batman. Crime Fighter challenge maps are a thing. These are, of course, different.
So exceedingly big.
Engage in a series of new challenge maps utilizing the unique playstyles of Batman and his allies.
The next one's just going to be extended gameplay. Gameplay.
Character skins.
That means you guys know what challenge maps are, right?
Yeah.
I assume it's the same ones from the last
year. Like the challenger.
Those are the ones that I'm always like, I'm pretty good at this game, and I play those, and I'm like, no, I'm not. Yeah.
Those are almost like puzzles.
Yeah, they're really, really
more
difficult.
Like a puzzle.
They get really difficult.
Then there are character skins. A variety of skins from across the eras of Batman, Robin, Nightwing, and Catwoman. I always like that because it's like getting to hire a different art director.
Mm-hmm.
You just go in there and you're like, oh, it's like Frank Miller Batman. That's cool. Mm-hmm. It's a big, muscly Batman Beyond.
I want a Carl Weathers skin.
Batman the Animated Series skin, but for the entire game.
For the whole game, yeah.
Just
draw it on black paper. Yeah. And so let's just play that.
Yeah,
game.
I want that too.
They always give us that costume, and I'm like, that's awesome.
Yep.
But he's still in that kind of like Nolan-esque, gritty, realistic.
Going back to Ukulele for a second, one of their stretch goals, which they hit, were a filter to play the game in 64-bit. So it's going to look like an N64 game.
Oh,
does
man.
That just like mean like smearing Vaseline
pretty
all over
much,
the screen?
Pretty much, yeah. Just destroying depth of field.
The
and,
terrible texture cache on the N64, like playing itself out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Cool. So what do we think about Batman's... you know what took them so long to get back what was in that season pass is they had to go find a thesaurus for how many words for story they could find. No, this is
story
great.
Challenge narrative mission quest.
Like, this stuff sounds cool. The Batgirl thing sounds awesome. $40 is pretty steep on top of a $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big story here, though, is I think this was an actual example of public outcry working.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that I don't necessarily condone... But moaning and crying and screaming over something you don't like. Mm-hmm. But that kind of worked here.
Yeah, so it's one of those, like, it was, you know, crappy of them to be like, hey, $40 but no details. And everyone said, this is sort of dumb. Like, this is the first time you guys have dropped the ball with your games.
Yeah, that was exactly it. Like, it wasn't like an EA thing where people are just so, or Ubisoft where people are so used to complaining about this thing.
Yeah.
This was just like, come on, we're supposed to love you guys.
Yeah,
you're
like,
Rocksteady.
We're not mad. We're disappointed.
Yeah,
they came back less than a week later, and we're like, hey, so we heard that some people wanted more details, and here are details. So good on them.
It reminded me of when to me, if it had no one said anything, then it just sort of becomes the norm that A, have $40 DLC, and B, have $40 DLC where you don't even announce what's in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of the PS3 launch, mm-hmm. where they were like, it's $599, and everyone was like, ha! And had they not laughed and screamed, they would have just been $600 consoles would have been the norm.
Yeah.
We'd be paying that left and right now,
and we
didn't get to that weird
There's a time to yell. You don't need to be mean, and you don't need to be myopic when you yell, but you can do that constructively, and it looks like people did.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's going back to the Kickstarter thing. This is one of the best things about the internet is that it is a real time, like, audience customer base reaction.
Yeah.
Whatever that thing is, we do listen to your complaints, dear readers, dear listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one.
Every word.
Here's
we read
one
them
specifically.
All. We cry. Single tears. Sorry.
This is an email that we got. This is from Duncan. This is also something that I've seen posted on Numerous Facebook groups in regards to Metal Gear Solid 5. He says, hello, pod people. I've been a listener to the show for a few years, but I've only recently become a fully-fledged member of the PlayStation family when I bought a PS4 and PS Vita. I'm really enjoying getting stuck into franchises and games that I've heard of but have never played. I think he means sucked. For example, Uncharted, The Last of Us Journey. But there's one franchise that I'm completely daunted by, and I don't know where to start. With Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, coming out this year, I thought I'd give Ground Zeroes a go and get me ready. I jumped in and was immediately lost by the story. The gameplay isn't a problem, but who are all these people? Why have they got funny snake names? And what's going on? I feel like I'd walked into a movie halfway through. A quick Google search revealed my problem. There have been 26 various Metal Gear titles to date. Mm-hmm. Do you know if I'm going to be able to pick up the Phantom Pain and understand the story, or can you give me a short synopsis of what I really need to understand? Failing that, would I have a better idea what's going on if I played Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on my Vita, or are those two games so old now that I'd be in the dark, and without having played the original Metal Gear, will I still be lost? Many thanks, and beyond, from a very confused listener, Duncan. who is Duff Dunks on PSN.
Did we ever do... We do a series here at IGN called In 5 Minutes.
Uh-huh.
Kind of infrequently, but when we do, it's amazing reader service. I wrote one for Call of Duty, and I wrote one for Uncharted. I think Uncharted 1 and 2 before 3 mm-hmm. came out. It's just sort of like refreshers. But for years, we joked about wanting to do Metal Gear. Mm-hmm. But hey, I don't think we've
Mitch
ever...
been talking about wanting to do... I think yeah, Mitch wants to do that, about but it just so seems...
I think that'd be but Metal Gear seems, in 5 hours.
It seems insane, right? Is that even possible to do in 5 minutes?
No, I don't
think so. Because this guy specifically is asking for that.
So yeah. I can give you... My short answer is... give the original Metal Gear Solid... is still referring to two other games that came out much earlier. Yeah. There's the original Metal Gear. Metal Gear 2 was never released stateside until it came out with Metal Gear Solid 3, which was like 13 years later or something.
Right.
The first Metal Gear Solid is probably the most immediately accessible in terms of kind of modern gameplay. It's still very difficult, but it's really kind of gorgeous and impressive. Mm-hmm. I would say it's like $6 on PSN, you know, roll the dice, give it a shot.
It's a pretty short game.
It's pretty short. I mean, if you're good at it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, it's parts of it have aged weirdly and other parts have held up incredibly well. You can also just watch a playthrough of it online. Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 are available in the HD collection. That's fabulous. That's a fantastic, fantastic way to get into the series. But Metal Gear Solid 2 also refers a lot to Metal Gear Solid 1. And the problem also is you're playing that on Vita. It's a really cool idea, but those were games that were meant to be played on a larger screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of weird detail, especially with the third one, which is it relies heavily on camouflage, which is kind of like you want to be able to tell if guards are looking at you. And if you're looking at it on a 4-inch screen, it's kind of tricky. Three is a prequel that takes place like 40 or 50 years before Metal Gear Solid 2, which is a bit weird. Most of the games, I looked down this list of Metal Gear games that... included. I think three of them were DLC for Metal Gear Online, which is just a multiplayer mode. Two of those were card games. There was Metal Gear Portable Ops, which is sort of like Pokemon but with human beings, where you would capture guards and then use them as your dudes. It's tricky. Metal Gear like Ground Zeroes. I went to Japan and I jumped into that. It's assuming you've played Peace Walker.
That's the big one that. I think the story ties in Phantom
Which
Pain are
also
linked a lot to
was
Peace Walker.
One of the ones that had like the most limited reception because it was a PSP game.
It was a PSP game.
Like
but
people love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it's absolutely worth going back and playing.
I don't really like it. I never got into it. I tried to revisit it. I did all my research before I played Ground Zeroes, and I still was a little bit lost because it's kind of like. In terms of plot, you're nestled pretty deep because it's a sequel to a prequel of the fifth sequel in a series or whatever the hell it is.
You know, the man who used to sit in that chair, it's his favorite game of all time.
I'm sorry, fans of this podcast. I've been told to take over. Stop throwing rocks at my house.
This is a series of games that is created by a crazy person and meant to be abstruse. Obtuse, vast, and difficult.
Was that for first word? Abstruse?
Abstruse.
Abstract and
that's a bird.
Abstruse. That's a word.
That's a real word.
Yeah, it's a real word.
Abstruse.
Abstruse. Yeah.
That sounds like a kind of bird.
No, it's abstruse. It means difficult to decipher or difficult to. Anyway. But
rare abstruse.
This whole thing's abstruse right now.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway.
The word abstruse is abstruse to me.
Okay, so the crazy Japanese man designs G.I. Joe plus space plus James Bond. And makes this incredible series of games that are so much fun to play, but they're deliberately difficult to get into. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole idea. The whole idea is you're just supposed to be soaked in these.
Oh, yeah.
So I really do think Max's description of how to go through them is probably the way to go at it. Yeah, you got to play them if you want to know what's going on.
That sucks.
Yeah. Or just read, like, the worst wiki ever.
Yeah, it's pretty messy to get in there. I mean, I jumped into Ground Zeroes, and I remember asking like before, and I'm like, so I didn't play Peace Walker. Am I gonna miss much? And they're like, well, there's luckily a helpful guide in the beginning, and it's like a 17 slide PowerPoint at the beginning of Ground Zeroes that you have to flip through, and it's like, here's what you missed, and I'm like, what? What? And it's really weird because like 5 is the biggest, most like open world, big, huge cinematic like iteration in the series. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most, it's the most polished one to date. And yet it's the sequel to one that was probably the least cinematic since like the NES MSX era because like it had motion comics for all the cutscenes. And this is like, it's really odd that was a deliberate choice. It's also like, you know, it's it's been a minute. Like Metal Gear Solid 4 was a weird kind of convoluted sort of end of the series. And then we had Revengeance in there. And it's like, this is a pretty good time for a fresh reboot of Metal Gear Solid. But like Phantom Pain does not look like it's going to be any kind of a fresh start for anybody, yeah. You know?
And doesn't that, I mean, that kind of sucks.
It does suck. It totally sucks.
Like yeah. It's because from somebody on the outside looking in, like I've dabbled in the Metal Gear games and I've played or finished a few of them, but I haven't followed the lore, especially like weaving through multiple platforms and stuff like that. But I look at it like, this game looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. You have this awesome looking character. He's the graphics are incredible. The open world setting is really interesting to me. I like mm-hmm. the horse stealth stuff looks really cool.
Like, of course you like the horse stuff.
No, you know what? They're cool animals, or I don't have to tell you. But everything about this game looks really cool until I realize that like I'm not gonna understand anything that's going on, and that sucks.
Well, it's Hideo Kojima. This man's the Andy Kaufman of video games. I mean, he does not care that you have to play through all of it. He wants you to. That's the conceit, that's the joy of it. That's what makes these games terrible and wonderful.
But I can't just go play this new game without doing it.
Of course you can. You have no idea what's happening.
Even if you play through all of it, like I've played probably through 20 of the 26 Metal Gear games, I'm not going to know what's going on in Phantom Pain. I don't really care.
Does it not matter?
No, I don't care.
Okay, so then...
Let me let you in on a little secret.
Nothing that happens in a video game really matters.
Yes.
Because it's not real.
Yes. Yes, I understand that. I understand that. Yeah. You understand that lore does have impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have three Star Wars tattoos.
Yes, I do. I get it. No, and I absolutely, I really.
Matters within the confines of the story that
this is one of the things that I. Yeah. And I'm probably stepping on some toes of hardcore fans by saying this, but I think one thing that the Metal Gear series could benefit from without Kojima's direct involvement, if Konami does in fact continue to exist as a company and is not engulfed in flames anytime soon. Making like a reboot of Metal Gear, making a fresh start. I mean, I was actually really hoping at one point that the Phantom Pain would be Metal Gear 1 again, you know, like mm-hmm. here it is 35 years later or what have you. And
I was hoping the same thing, honestly. And that's kind of what I maybe had tricked myself into thinking it was, but it's not. You know what I hope happens 2 years from now? They do reboot it and a whole bunch of people are like, man, they really dumbed it down and they're really angry. And I can sit in the corner going, yes.
But like Max says, that is very much dependent on the question of whether Konami is at all interested in producing console video games anymore.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that they're focused on mobile and
Metal Gear will be a pachinko machine in 3 years. Yeah. If it's not already, I'm sure it
is. You'll be able to understand that game, though.
No, actually, we've talked about pachinko cafes on this show before, mm-hmm. and they, first of all, it's not a cafe.
Well, there are pachinko cafes. That's
they don't know. Those things make less sense to me than any Metal Gear game. They're completely loud and confusing.
They're not cafes, they're sensory prisons.
Yes, they are.
That's amazing.
They beat you in the head.
So I don't know. I HD Collection is a great spot to check out Metal Gear.
They're also just good. Like you owe it to yourself to go back and be like, Metal Gear Solid 3 is really good. And I guess Metal Gear Solid's really good.
And I guess
I love 2 the most. That's my favorite. Yeah. But it really doesn't work unless you know what's happening in 1. And 3 is arguably like a lot more interesting in terms of what it does. And mm-hmm. it's also, I'd say 3 might be a good starting point because it is a prequel.
Yeah.
Snake Eater.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, because I mean, I tried replaying that game recently, and the first hour of it is very much just like, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they shooting at me?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I climbing this tree to get my bag? Why did I just eat a snake's egg?
Or which one?
Huh?
Were you playing Subsistence, or were you playing?
It's probably, if it was the newest one, it's probably.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but it sounds like we owe it to our audience to write and produce that Metal Gear.
We have until September.
Yeah.
Also,
it's going to take us that long.
Secret Ghost Babel's awesome.
Ghost Babel's awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous game.
Yeah.
All right. So, another email. Our dream video game mashup. This is from Milo in Melksham.
What? Is that a real place?
Probably.
Was that next to Yarnum?
If you could fuse any two games into one incredible Vegito game, I like that. That's a Dragon Ball Z reference.
I thought that was a sexy thing.
Old men who don't watch cool cartoons like me. Which games would you choose and why? Inspired by last week's chat, I think any interesting mashup would be to combine the mechanics and global reach of any Call of Duty game with the story of Spec Ops: The Line. I think this would be great as it would have exposed more people to that wonderful story and been an exciting needle mover for COD. While also being hilarious in its incongruity as an anti-war game coming off the back of a decade of annualized war games.
Mm-hmm. You know what sucks? They were making mine. It was Star Wars 1313.
Because it was Star Wars, but with
Uncharted. It was Uncharted and mm-hmm. sci-fi. And I was like, yep, those are two of my favorite things in the world. Put them together.
Yeah.
I actually really like... I love the sort of pacing of Uncharted style games, or Tomb Raider actually, probably even a little more so. I think I liked the last Tomb Raider game more than I liked Uncharted 3. Mm-hmm. Sorry. But those things are always grounded in like right now, or it's just like a guy in the woods with with just like mud, and I'd love to see aliens and like ships come in that are crashed over that you're climbing up and stuff like that, like these sort of like space war torn landscapes that you're climbing on different planets and fighting people that aren't just 55 white dudes with helmets on with shotguns. You know, you can shoot white guys in space, but let me shoot some aliens too. You know,
to continue on the Star Wars thing. For some reason, reading this just made me think. I want a game that's like the bar scenes in Catherine, but just takes place in the cantina.
Mm, oh wow!
Yeah, man. And just like real, like get in depth and like know who these weird characters are and what their flaws are and what their backstories are, and have it sort of be this. Because the way Catherine did each day, it was almost like real time where you could miss things and you could, if you're going to talk to this dude for 5 minutes, you're not going to be talking to that dude for 5 minutes and he might bounce during your conversation.
You need to play Callahan's Cross Time Saloon so bad.
We were talking about that the other day. Yeah. Why does that sound familiar?
You've got to play this game.
Yeah. That's a real game.
Yeah, Callahan's Cross Time Saloon. It's an adventure game and I don't want to spoil it, but it's this really cool kind of sci-fi, down-to-earth, Spider Robinson written old style point and click PC adventure game, and it's what Marty.
It's a lot of what Marty wants in the
universe. Hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
Man, I kind of want it like a combination of what you two just said, but like think the different characters thing from GTA, but in Mos Eisley.
Yeah,
and like maybe scale it down so it's. I mean, you get the ball rolling. It's going to keep going.
Get the ball droid rolling,
or either that, or think like somewhere between. And I'm not trying to be funny. This is actually something that I'd love to see. Somewhere between Goat Simulator, Mortal Kombat, and Motor Storm, where it's animals that are racing, but they're like just hyper violent. And just like if they go too fast, they blow up. And if they crash into each other, blood flies everywhere.
Mm-hmm. So this is Speed with animals?
No, it's much worse than that. It would be more like, I don't know, Road Warrior, but with farm animals.
That sounds great.
I don't know why that's a thing that I thought of, but I don't know. It's just funny to me.
That's such a good idea. Oh, I play that. That sounds wonderful. I think I'm going to go back to one for a thing I turned in my copy too late to get into one of the group projects that we do here. I want Final Fantasy Tactics with the Avengers or with superheroes. I want to play Final Fantasy Tactics, and you've got that wonderful thing where it's squad versus squad, and everybody's got special abilities. That's every comic book ever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you can have teams of superheroes battling teams of superheroes or villains from the same continuity and universe with that tactics control engine. Yeah.
Of all the games we pitched, I feel like yours is the most likely to get made, but...
Free-to-play mobile.
It's going to be
It's going to be free-to-play mobile.
Because that sounds like I can see what that looks like in my head.
Yeah,
first
the battle scenes would be so much fun. But second, this is a game that you could build a story around. I mean, you could build a great story. Because, the best comics are built first on story and second on pummeling. And I think you could make that work, 1-2 punch with that kind of thing. I've dreamt about that game since I played Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah.
We've talked about things that I really want. On this podcast before, like I think you said the Richard Scarry open world game, and
Richard Scarry open world game exists.
It's not open enough.
Yeah. And then you said the open world game that takes place in Toontown.
Yeah,
I want that game too. Yeah. I want all those games.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring this Richard Scarry game in one day. We're gonna play it.
Sounds Richard spooky.
This isn't really. I like how. Write it down.
I'm writing it down, man.
Hold on. I just got to say real quick, it's kind of nice that we censor curses on this podcast because it makes each one so special.
Yeah.
Like you feel like it's...
No, we're like
it's
Spawn
like,
using his powers.
Yeah, it's like I was going to say it's like a fighting game where you build up your special and you get to use it in the right moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the Spawn reference better, I think.
Is the special just making me write something down? Is that what the special is?
That is part of the joy, yeah. I do get enjoyment from that.
So we got a letter in the mail on paper.
Whoa.
How does that work?
White powder with it?
Not anymore.
White powder.
Okay.
Somebody sniffed it all up.
That's bad too.
Powder.
I know. I got it.
Yeah.
This is from a lovely fellow named Chase Bethia, who I met at GDC a couple years ago. He says, "Hello, Marty, Max, Brian, and Jared. Hopefully, Jared is there."
Magic wish, man.
Thank you so much. That was very.
That's
nice
really nice because I used to do the show with Greg and Colin. They would be like, "Hi, Greg and Colin, and whoever the fuck's in the third chair of it. It's me again. Sorry." Aww.
I just feel so honored.
I didn't say the full F word.
Chase goes on
only
to say
half my special.
I am curious about the sorting hat goes around over at IGN in regards to reviewing a game. I really want to know if people get to choose the game they want to review. Are the people that work there pressed for time to review a game? Are there consequences to missing a review posting date? Is it a free-for-all for reviewing new games? Is there seniority for reviewing more popular game? Example, a point-and-click adventure game comes out and a reviewer from IGN has chosen to do the review. This particular reviewer doesn't like point-and-click adventures at all, but because it's his or her job to play video games, he or she is now under a time crunch to get the review out.
A lot of questions there.
Marty,
you've probably reviewed more games than I think anyone that's ever worked here.
Yeah, I think I was number one last year, and I'm currently number one.
Really?
Yeah.
How many games did you review last year?
Over 30.
Wow.
But I think I cheated because I had a couple Telltale series, so that's like five games.
You counted each one of those? They're they're chapters.
I mean, the thing that starts off, Dan Stapleton, our reviews editor, sort of, he chooses someone who would probably buy this game regardless. Not regardless, but like someone who would be interested in this game regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
So I review a lot of our point-and-click adventure games because that's a genre I really love. I reviewed Dark Souls 2 because I love Dark Souls 1.
Yep.
They're not going to throw someone who... I don't play sports games, so never going to review a sports game.
Yep.
Please
do once just for yourself.
Pro tip to aspiring freelancers wanting to get into games writing: learn how to play
sports games and racing games. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, that's actually a really good tip.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our racing games, we handle them like in the UK and AU because they're big fans of how cars like go against each other.
Because driving on that side of the road is more fun, apparently.
American or United States sporting-based things have been handled by freelancers or contractors almost exclusively for the last 4 years, I would say, here at IGN.
Yeah. I mean, so there's also things like that. Like, those games can be serious time crunches.
Yeah.
You know, massive RPGs can be time crunches. And, like, yeah, the big ones, like, you know, Vince reviewed Dragon Age, and he's at home right now reviewing Witcher. Like, those are things we want to do in-house. But at the same time, like, a smaller... You know, not to poo-poo on the Vita, but a smaller Vita RPG, if we're going to review it, we might give to a freelancer because, hey, it's not worth the 40, 50 hours of someone in-house doing a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, sometimes it does come down to seniority. You know, sometimes the executive editors get their first pick. But if there's – yeah, I don't think we've ever had a case here where someone's reviewed a game and I've been like – that's you put a wrong person on there.
Yeah.
Because
a
review is just an opinion.
I mean, you could disagree with their score
at
the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that happens all the time.
Oh,
and like that's the thing that like I always try to stress to people who listen to this show or watch this show that like if you're reading one of our reviews and you're yelling at it because you disagree with it, like we have those same conversations in the office about everything.
Yeah.
When you're reading one of our ranked lists and you're like, what, Vision is not better than Quicksilver or something like that, like we're having those same debates in the office. Like all those things are happening right here. And you know, maybe Quicksilver is better than Vision. I don't know.
They're decided by headlocks.
That's right.
Really what
that's
the,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Vision's kind of wet. You can't always get that ball.
I don't think Vision's...
He looks like a slimy man. He's a weird... I don't know
he's
what that
is.
He's not
even a man. He's intangible.
All right. So,
headlocks don't work.
Is that your
I know
what...
when I...
All right.
When I started working in this industry at IGN, I was writing for a site called GameSpy, and I wanted to pick up a few reviews here and there. GameSpy was a PC site, but they also did console stuff. So I remember specifically asking about 6 months after I started if I could review Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass.
Oh.
And one of the more senior people there was just like, you haven't earned that yet. Mm. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm like the best person on staff because I'm a huge Zelda guy. And they're like, no, you have to play just garbage for years before you can play something like that. I feel like a lot of that has gone away.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
luckily,
definitely.
Like, we don't haze new people
Brandon
anymore.
Terrell came in and two of his first three games were The Order and Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I wouldn't want to review Bloodborne because we got that game like the day it came out and he had to play it for a week and he had scary spider ladies attack him.
One was 4 hours long and one was 400 hours.
Yes,
so
exactly.
That was the thinking, maybe.
But yeah, there's. I mean, it's not really just – I think like – I feel like the old sort of senior journalist, like magazine-style guys back in the day were probably just like – the best guy, you know, the oldest guys, and the most senior guys get the coolest games, and all the new guys get the junk. But,
what was your first GameSpy review? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I think it might have been No More Heroes
2?
Oh, you still did. My first review ever was for GameSpy, and it was Mafia Wars 2 by Zynga.
Yeah, I mean, I was that's awful.
Wow.
No, I was mentored in by guys like Ryan Scott, mm-hmm. you know, who they would start they wrote for 1UP. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. And they would and they would say things like they would go up to freelancers and interns and be like, "Hey, what you know? What do you like to do on the weekends?" They're like, "Oh, I like to, you know, hang out and stuff." You ever go to an amusement park? Yeah, I love amusement parks. What about theme parks? Yeah, I love theme parks. Cool. You're reviewing Circus DS, and it was just like, no, like it's a horrible trick. And like you don't really hear so much of that with Dan Stapleton. You know, he's much more of a fair king than that. Yeah.
That's good. I would speak to this more, but I've only been here for a few months, so yeah. I don't really. Mm-hmm. And I'm also not probably not reviewing stuff any point soon. I don't
yeah,
maybe I mean, maybe you, eventually. I don't know. But
yeah.
like nobody's that's not my primary job duty. So
no, I mean you and Brian are hosts, and as yeah. hosts, you don't really review yeah. games. You have different things. That's Which why is, you know Greg yeah. stopped reviewing games the last couple of years he was here because he became a host.
Yeah.
I did review games at Rev3 when I was there. I never reviewed anything for Destructoid, I don't think. But I did do stuff for Revision 3, which was interesting because I was working with like Adam Sessler before he started. It was me and it was Zach Miner and Tara Long and Anthony Carboni, and that was our entire team basically. Mm-hmm. That was everybody. We had I think maybe one or two occasions when we had a freelancer come in. And the thing is, we're always going to be the personalities. There's one review that I did that I didn't write the review myself. It was for Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, which is a huge, massive game. And I was reviewing some other game at the same time and also doing, you know, regular content and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we had a freelancer come in who's a guy I know named Miguel who played the game at home and basically captured the footage. And we compared notes on what we thought of it. And he, you know, we kind of accommodated both of our thoughts on my time with the game and his time with the entirety of the game. And, you know, it was... I always feel sort of guilty about that. But then there's a ton of other games that I did review myself, and mm-hmm. I did play that. And I don't really miss it because it's kind of, it's really a horrible thing to do. Video games can be everything from like Tetris to The Last of Us. You know, yeah. like they take mm-hmm. so many forms, and to be like, hey, so the review is going up on Tuesday. You need to have it ready by then, or to answer your question, Chase, it's you get maybe in trouble if you're late on every review. You kind of miss the boat. It doesn't look good in the eyes of PR. It doesn't look good in the eyes of your bosses. But you know, you're like, hey, can you play through this 40-hour game in a week? And it's like that's not normal. That's not normal. Like it might seem great, but it's kind of like the Bruce Bogtrotter theme or scene in Matilda where he's like gets in trouble for stealing cake, and so they make him eat the entire cake in front of the whole school. Everyone's like, Bruce!
I want to kiss you for making that reference.
I will always throw down some Roald Dahl.
Okay,
here.
I'm
that was
with you
good.
There.
Yeah,
that's
really
one of my
good.
Favorite books.
Yeah.
But we actually talked
about.
And
if you don't do it in time, you get thrown in the pokey.
We talked about Brandon Tyrell's
Chokey.
His 4 or 5 days where he had to play Bloodborne too much. And a couple of people tweeted at me and they're just like, oh, I would kill for that. You know, I hate my job. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it's all relative. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's not. You would probably kill to play a game for 4 days. It's like, hey, boss, I'm taking 4 days off of work and I'm playing Bloodborne. Yeah, that sounds awesome. But then having to come back and write a, you know, couple page long review, write a video script, make sure all the footage is captured.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, this obviously didn't happen for Bloodborne because it was exclusive, but reviewing has changed a lot here in IGN in the last few years in terms of calculating and mapping the difference from each platform to platform.
Yeah.
And that's something that wasn't really that prevalent when I started. I mean, you saw it a little bit, like we would put in like a footnote or something like that. But with like the resolution gate that happened a few mm-hmm. years ago of sort of like, which game looks best? Like which is what? How many P's is this running on?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it became well, we had to do graphics tests between each one.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually you're getting into like science and math a little more than just reading and writing and arithmetic.
Yeah. And a lot of stuff you have to wait until the game is out in the wild. If a game
yeah.
has a heavy online component, we can't really. That's why we don't put scores on mm-hmm. online games before the games come out.
Yep.
That's why we have a review in progress. And a lot of people think it's some conspiracy for us to get clicks. And it's like, no, we don't want to put a score on a game and then have the game not work and have the review be a lie to you. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these games.
For the readers and the viewer benefit.
100%. A lot of these games are actually tested and built under the pressure of servers that just don't exist when they're in pre-production.
Yeah.
Or even in post, when they hand us a game and they go, hey, you know, what do you think of this? And we're like, well, we can't play like GTA Online. We couldn't play. It wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And by the time it was ready, it was crashing like crazy. But eventually we were like, now it's playable. Now it's working. Let's revisit this and let's talk about it.
But all of this taken into due consideration, there is it's one of my favorite things that I do here when I do get a chance to do it. And that's because when it's something wonderful, you get a chance to tell people how wonderful a game is.
Yeah.
When it's something terrible, you get a chance to warn people.
Yeah.
At least some people before they run out and waste their money that they could be spending on another good thing.
Totally.
And I really enjoy that part.
Yeah. I'm glad you said it like that, because I don't think we've ever really hired people that take joy in trashing a game. Like every now and then you'll see one of those like 1 out of 10 scores. It's just like, man, this is abysmal. It's awful. But those are like, they barely even count as games. Like they're so bad that you have to go that low.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like if we gave a game like a 4 or 5, like the reviewer probably wanted to like it. He or she's not sitting there going like, oh man, I'm gonna rip this thing apart. It's gonna be the time of my life. Like you know,
Negativity like breeds negativity.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is we don't really want to be negative about stuff, and it really is very nerve wracking when you spend 40 hours on a game or something, and then you write your review and you put it up, and people are like, meh, you know, or people are like, this guy's wrong. And you're like, well, all right, I wasted 40 hours, so there you go. Now, we have been doing this thing this month that we've been very bad about checking in on. We had our podcast Beyond Book Club. We all said we were going to play Aru's Awakening and Monster Bag, which were the free games on PlayStation Plus this month for basically all the systems. Aru's Awakening was on PS3 and PS4, and Monster Bag was on Vita. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of them? Did you play them?
I played Aru's Awakening.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? Let's start with that one, because it's alphabetical and it has two A's.
It does have two A's. This was a game I felt like I was predisposed to love, and I didn't. And
me
I was
too.
Bummed out by
That's,
that.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I'm like, this is a 2D puzzle platformer with gorgeous, like absolutely stunning hand-drawn art. Like,
yeah.
The creatures in this world look incredible. I love the atmosphere of like the sun raining down on you and your characters are sweating and the weird stuff comes out at night. But ultimately, the core mechanic of sort of vamping and teleporting in the game just feels weird, and when a core gameplay mechanic of a game doesn't hook me, that's just it's like a shooter where the shooting doesn't feel good.
You know what's interesting is that this people were kind of comparing this to The Swapper, which I know you really loved.
I love it,
but I love the look of it, but I actually got kind of tripped up with that like multiplicity thing that was going on and the teleporting and all that. Like call me like old school, but I actually like my kind of exploration-based 2D platformers to be a little more platformy and less
puzzle-based.
Mm-hmm. It's a difficult balance to strike.
Yeah. So this felt like a kind of watered-down version of something that I thought I would love and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like so many steps down removed from like, man, this looks like it's my game, but I felt the exact same way.
Yeah.
My take on it was it definitely felt like it was built on a sort of incomplete mechanic. You know, they said that they built it based on the teleporter in Unreal Tournament, which I don't know if you ever used it, but it's like a really cool thing if you get the hang of it. Like you can kill somebody by teleporting through them, but you have to be really good at it to do that right.
Yeah.
And then they kind of threw in this really cool aesthetic that I was kind of into. It reminded me a lot of the Max, the old comic, like that Sam Keith style.
Yeah.
It's a Unity game, which is interesting, and it's also hand drawn, which is also interesting. And I'm wondering if part of the reason this got thrown up there, when it did, is if Sony scouted it out and was like, "This can be our Ori and the Blind Forest."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that's similar, like different games.
I was playing
clearly.
Both of these at the same time. I'm still playing through Ori, and I'm like, man, one
I mean,
of
even
these
the names
like
are kind of similar sounding.
Yeah.
Like you've got a lot of similar elements there. It felt very like very ambitious in a way that like student games are. Like they've got all this lore in there, and I'm like, it's a really like once you get out of the lore, it's a very like the game doesn't have anything to do with the story. You know, it's not ludonarrative dissonance. It just doesn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
Like you're moving your way through this entirely surreal landscape. There's no need to explain anything.
Mm-hmm. I think like you kind of nailed it too about like if you don't have like a lot of games are built. Not really. Like I think if it gets built based on a story, it's already kind of a problem out the gate. Mm. Like it's very rare that works. I think it has to start from a mechanic that is fundamentally sound and is awesome, And I don't think this game had that. And yeah, I think they just kept building stuff around it to sort of cover up for the fact that, like, that thing right there doesn't hook you the way it should, you know?
So it's funny, there's a line in The Simpsons, it's that episode where Homer becomes a food critic, and there's the old food critic who's retiring, and they give them a birthday cake, and he's like, oh, great, Baskin-Robbins, why make 32 flavors if you can't get vanilla right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of relevant here. Yeah, like, and it's like, really, if you're making a platformer, and you got to have the jumping tight, you got to get that one thing right.
Mario taught us this. Super Mario Brothers taught us that.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, of course, we've got Monster Bag on Vita, which is a really weird little game. That I get kind of vibes of like Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends from that. You're an inanimate backpack. Unanimate backpack that's alive, that's a monster, that's also a bag, that's making its way from the back of its owner to it's trying to find your owner.
Mm-hmm.
What? but it's a stealth puzzle adventure game kind of
where sort of in every scene your owner just exits scene right and you have to maneuver your way through the scene in order to get to where they were going, and you have to do so by, it's like a stealth game because you don't want to be spotted by the humans who are walking around, but it also becomes a puzzle game because you have to realize, well, how do I distract certain people, how do I get certain people to move. And I love the aesthetic of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I love that look.
Yep.
I think the game's great. I love stealth puzzle games in theory, but again, in execution, this didn't hook me super hard. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bummed that it felt like the puzzles had this one kind of finite solution to them, and I would just keep bashing my head against the wall in order until I was like, oh, okay, well, this is the thing I need to do.
Well, we're talking like an Adventures of Lolo type thing where there's just only one way to get the level right.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep dying and dying.
Oh, Lolo.
Yeah. The issue there is that there's a death animation where if somebody saw you, which is really, I think that's the only way you can really die in that.
Yeah.
It's just if somebody catches you, the whole game freezes and it zooms in and it says brutal kill and they like chop you in half or they shoot you or something, you know? And I feel like it's one of those things that maybe they had a bunch of different death animations, but they didn't get a chance to finish them all, and they were just like, let's just ship it with this one or something. And I'm just speculating there, but that was the thing that really kind of ruined the experience for me, because it's not – like, it's punishing me for failing at the stealth portion of something that isn't really a strong stealth game.
Yeah, right.
Like, you're memorizing – you're timing your movement in a way that's not – it's not making you want to continue playing it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Trial and error games can be a lot of fun if you get back to it quick and if you feel like you're
Super
advancing.
Meat Boy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that instant respawn in Super Meat Boy is something that's sort of, if a game's going to be really tough, that's a thing that has to exist.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, one of the main problems everyone had with Bloodborne was that, like, this game's really hard, I die a lot, and I'm punished with a minute-long loading screen every time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you took out the stealth elements in Monster Bag, I feel like it could have been like a really charming little puzzle game, but the problem with that is it wouldn't be very challenging. It would just be kind of like a little interactive storybook type of thing. But I mean, it felt like an artificial challenge kind of. Like it's for lack of a better word, just cheap in how it punishes you.
Right.
So I don't know. But hey, they were free games, you know.
Yeah. On a more positive note, this month's free games are pretty much across the board awesome.
Oh man, this is one of the best ones ever.
Yeah. We've got Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition. That's PS4. Is that on all of them, or is it just PS4?
That's just the PS4 one. It's free. And that's a game, obviously, Brian, you inducted it into our Essential 50.
Yeah, I love
incredible.
It. This is actually also has all the extra DLC stuff.
Plays different characters, multiplayer stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then there's Ether 1.
Which is also coming out this week, so it's free for PlayStation Plus. New game. This was a PC first-person exploration adventure puzzle game, sort of gone home, but it has this like cool time travel, puzzle mechanic to it.
Cool.
Game's gorgeous, super fun, atmospheric. I never finished the PC version, so excited to hop into it.
Then there's the Unfinished Swan, which is PS3 cross-buy with PS4 and PS Vita. That's been out for a little while.
Have you played that game, Max?
I haven't. Actually.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. This one's
I think
right
you specifically would like.
Yeah, you play as a invisible paint throwing baby that tries to discover the world around it using
nothing
but goo.
This was a Game of the Year nominee 3 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go that far, but I definitely did enjoy it. The pacing's kind of deliberately slow, and it's very much like being born in the first hour. You have no idea what's going on. Everything's white. And you're just aimlessly throwing paint everywhere. But they start doing a lot of stuff with environment and color as the game keeps building.
The game's short.
It's very short.
Like you'll finish it in like 2.5-3 hours. Like it's if you haven't played it yet, I mean, pick it up and you know, play it on PS4.
This is a game.
I was going to say, this is also a cross-buy game, so you can get it. If you have a PS3, Vita, PS4, it works on everything. Mm-hmm. So.
And this is a game I wanted a sequel to. I feel like there's so many good ideas.
Yeah, the Finnish Swan.
That didn't quite come together. There's a lot of great stuff in it still.
Yeah, and that's, I feel like Giant Sparrow's been working on a game called codenamed Edith Finch for a while. It's another PlayStation exclusive game, but we haven't
seen it
yet.
Yep. Then there's Race the Sun, PS3 cross-buy with PS4 and Vita. This is like a surrealist racing game?
Like almost like a racing endless runner. Kind of looks like a really good version of Star Fox for Super Nintendo. Super cool, trippy.
I'm down. A really good version of Star Fox for Super Nintendo.
Yeah, if that makes sense.
The linchpin question here is how good is the music? Because this is one of those games that like...
The music's good, but it's not as good as the music in the next game.
Which is Hohokam.
Yes.
And you're correct there.
That is, if you haven't played Hohokam, that is a game where you, sit down, you do things.
Hohokam is how I recovered from jet lag from being in Vietnam and food poisoning from ordering mall sushi in San Bruno. That was an awful week, and I decided to tackle the disgusting wormy things in my stomach with adorable wormy thing flying around.
There you go.
Yeah.
That game is so cool.
It's paired well with spicy water and jazz cigarettes.
Oh, Marty. Then there's Murasaki Baby, which is like the Tim Burton-est looking game you've ever seen.
Yeah, on Vita. Super, weird.
Yep. Mary Joan and Vasquez.
Dark,
Spooky.
Yeah.
Spooky,
well, all these things are free.
Babies.
You get $150 worth of free games. Yeah. Go play them.
So if you don't have a PS Plus account, I don't know why. You should get one. You should get on that. Should we pick a book club game? Should we discuss it further?
Oh, yeah. How about Ether 1?
Ether 1?
It's new.
I could do that. Why don't we pick two? Okay. Let's do Ether 1 and Race the Sun.
Okay.
Okay.
But that being said, if you haven't played the other games in this list, please play Guacamelee and Unfinished Swan first.
Yeah.
I mean, play the other ones for our book club, but yes, definitely play Guacamelee.
And we're going to be better at checking in as opposed to the end of the month.
Cool. Yeah. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Wolfenstein The Old Blood is out Tuesday. It's $20.
Yeah, it's a standalone. Like, I think it's retail and digital. You don't need Wolfenstein. It's a prequel. I think
it's just a regular Nazi game as opposed to like
a weird
futuristic 1960s Nazi game.
Robot zombies?
I think robot zombie Nazis. Yeah. It takes place it comes out.
I saw that movie.
By the time you're listening to this, it's already out, but our review's probably not up because we don't have the game yet. So
Is that a sign?
No, I don't think it's a sign.
Okay.
I think it's just it sucks. And not the game sucks. Oh. It just sucks that we don't have the game yet.
I was going to say, because then a lot of times here at IGN, we don't get a game until last minute. It's the same sort of thing that happens when they don't send a movie reviewer to review and he has to go see it on Friday night. It's usually because they're trying to hide it from
him. No, I mean, but Wolfenstein was rad. I like Wolfenstein a lot. So I'm hopefully getting code tonight or tomorrow, and I'll start it then. And it's on our live stream tomorrow, which doesn't matter because I don't even know if this podcast will be up by then.
All right.
Yeah.
Finally, we have our Essential 50. Jared, you brought a lovely old chestnut.
I did. Yeah, it's time for this to go in there. Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Yep. Done. Wrap it up.
Yeah. I think we can almost do that. This is my favorite game on any PlayStation platform ever.
Wow.
I love.
Is it your favorite? So it's your favorite Castlevania game too?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Although I love Rondo. I love Rondo of Blood.
Really?
Yeah. Totally. Diametrically opposed games. One's a classical kind of stiff platformer. The other's exploratory, but they're both wonderful. I can't say enough good things about it. It has probably the bravest twist. The internet was not what it is today, and it was entirely possible to miss half this game to get the bad ending and have no idea. Because the completion meter went up to 100, and it was 200%. And so, you know, here's the big spoiler. You got the inverted castle in the sky where the really superior second half of the game is waiting.
Yeah.
And you could miss that whole thing.
Yep. The entire game literally turned upside down.
The whole you play it map again, which is playable genius. In reverse. But all the new enemies and new plot things unfolding, and new music for every area.
God, the music's so good.
And this on a system, that didn't have the most powerful sound hardware, they really got some great synth out of the PlayStation, which was not always great at synth.
Yeah.
This and Final Fantasy VIII did some things with that. Incredible art. It's still ridiculously playable. Great pacing. Great opening. The opening of Castlevania is the end of Rondo.
Yeah.
Like the final boss battle of Rondo.
You play through that. Yeah.
So, spoilers for Rondo.
Spoilers for Rondo. Also, there's so much depth in this game. Just ridiculous depth that you will never know is there unless you go looking for it. There are these Street Fighter button combo magic spells you can do and unlock.
Yeah, turn into a bat.
There's all these RPG elements. There's all these things you can transform into. These little secret guys that'll follow you around. And you can level your little guys that follow you around up.
They were familiars.
Yeah, and... but you don't have to discover any of this, but you can. Or all the when you combine the shields and certain weapons, and suddenly you do other button combinations and magic stuff happens. And none of this is documented. They just expect you to figure it out. And what a wonderful game. Okay, that's my long spiel.
Back when games had secrets.
If nobody's turned off by the massive pile of secrets you left on the table there, how should they get this? What's the best way? Because it's an old game. How do you jump on it? We should do this more.
Yeah.
My favorite way to play it is on PSN on my Vita.
Okay.
I really like it that way. There are several ways you can do it. It comes together. If you want to buy the old PSP Rondo of Blood pack, which is also available, you can do it that way. You have to unlock it. And that gets you Rondo of Blood and Symphony. But I actually like the dedicated version of Symphony on PSN a little better. I feel like the emulation's slightly better on that one.
And you already spoiled Rondo.
You fight Dracula at the end of Rondo of Blood.
Damn it, Jared.
And at the end of Castlevania. Yeah, kids, if you're fighting Richter at the end of Castlevania, you're doing it wrong.
They've already come so far.
I know. But yeah, that was a long spiel, but this is one of my all-time favorite games.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's one of the few PS1 games that I replay on a very regular basis.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cool. There we go.
Local video games. Before we go, should we talk about how next week's episode is going to be a little bit different?
Next week's episode is going to be kind of weird. We're going to be broadcasting it live.
Yeah.
We're going to be recording it live, and you'll be able to watch it if you aren't busy doing other things.
Yeah.
This is going to be just on the IGN...
Yeah, it's going to be Wednesday. So the episode's going to be late because this is going to be on Wednesday. You probably listen to this on Tuesday. It's going to be on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific. So from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on every Wednesday, we do IGN Plays Live, where we two of us play a game. We've all been on the streams before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so literally right after that, we're just going to go over to an episode of Beyond in here.
Right.
And we're going to be talking about our E3 predictions, which a lot of you have been awesome and we have a ton of rad emails, and so we're really excited to read a lot of the emails, sort of get feedback on we're going to make our weird predictions and see if you guys like them,
if you don't like them. We'll be in the chat and keeping track of this. And
maybe
if you only listen to this as an audio podcast, you get to see what we all look like.
Yeah.
Max, Marty, Brian, is there going to be a cat noise button to protect you from
we're not
going to curse, yeah. We're going to try and do that. We're going to be good boys.
We're going to treat curses like actual curses.
Who's
if they
a good
happen,
boy?
We are.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I mean
we're not gonna say
meow
or
hey,
we're not gonna say fart
meow.
We're not gonna say meow
meow.
God damn it!
You can say fart. I can say
fart.
Yeah,
you can't say.
What are you meows with? This is gonna sound like a cat fight at the end of this episode.
Woof woof.
That's real awful.
You can totally say fart.
The best thing about Tuesdays is I come into work and there's just a list on my desk that just says Beyond, and then it's a bunch of swear words with time code next to them.
And like in parentheses, the person who said them.
Yeah.
Jared, it's never you though.
I try to be genteel.
That's why we bring you back.
I've cursed on Beyond before.
Blasphemy.
You meowed.
All right.
So thank you guys so much for listening. If you'd like to send us emails, it's just beyond@ign.com, and you can send them to us there. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, say hello, ask us questions about things. I'm Max Scoville. Marty is McBiggity. Mm-hmm. Brian is Agent Bizzle. And Jared is Petty, Jared, which I always read as I think it's like Petty or like Petite Comrade or something.
Commma. Yeah, it's a terrible Twitter handle.
You can change it. Yeah.
Pretty Commander.
It's not a
Pretty
PSN
Commander.
Name.
Is
Pretty,
what it
Commander. Pretty Commander. I'd like to be
Pretty
Commander.
That's the anime that you're based on, I think.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate
always
it.
Always a pleasure.
Always.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Beyond.
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 Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.